In the cinematic sea of prequels, sequels, reboots, and reimaginings, the Movie Retakes podcast considers the merits and desires for Hollywood's new takes on our beloved movie classics. Brothers Matt and Chris Sully examine the latest retake franchises, pitch their own original retake visions, and share their love for the movies that made them. This is Big Sully.
And this is Matt Scary Feet Sully. Welcome, welcome, welcome. There's going to be so many Sullys here because it's the Monsters, Inc. episode. Yay!
The new commercial's on!
The future is bright at Monsters Incorporated.
I'm in this
We're
one.
Part
I'm
of
in
your
this one.
Life. We power your car. We warm your home. We light your city.
I'm Monsters Incorporated.
Hey, look, Betty!
Every time you turn something on, Monsters Incorporated is there.
I'm Monsters Incorporated.
We're working for a better tomorrow. Today.
We're Monsters Incorporated.
Where am I? Monsters Incorporated. We scare because we care.
They rehearsed the play.
It's surprising it took us this long to get to it.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Like, shouldn't have been one of the first ones we tackled, but here we are.
Yeah, this should have been our pilot episode, I guess. But but I think everybody's been looking forward to this one. And I have been too. This is our first Pixar, I believe. Yeah, we've done
it is.
We've done animated movies. But yeah, this is our first Pixar. I think you and I are both big fans. I don't know who isn't a fan of Pixar movies. Like, they, out of the gate with Toy Story, I mean, they've just been so amazing over the years. And, you know, they've even had missteps and stuff, but I never regret watching a Pixar movie. I it's always the right decision.
Yeah, the real question only is not, are you a Pixar fan? Because, again, everyone is. It's which Pixar movie is your favorite? And everybody has seen at least a few of the Pixar films, so it's an easy discussion.
Yeah, adults and children alike. I think that's one of my favorite things about Pixar movies is that Disney's been really good about entertaining for adult audiences as well. But you know, you're guaranteed when you go to see a Pixar film that the whole family is going to be entertained. They've got that mastered. And visuals are just more impressive every time. And the characters, the script, you laugh out loud every time. You're just guaranteed to have a great time. And so that's pretty awesome as a production company to know that you've got a built-in audience. Everybody's going to rush to see your films. But we are going to talk exclusively about Monsters, Inc. and Monsters University and the upcoming Monsters at Work today. Before we get to that, if you haven't followed and subscribed everywhere, you've got to do that, because then you'll get alerted to when we've got new podcasts, when we're on Twitch, which we are now every Wednesday. That is at 6 p.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Eastern. And man, we've been having so much fun. I think we've been doing that consistently probably like 3 months now, maybe longer. And great time. We always play trivia. So we always have some movie trivia going. I don't know when I'll get this episode out, but probably not before the next one. We've been trying to do more trivia that is audience picked. So from the people that show up, they've all suggested all kinds of stuff. But want to make sure that they get to play some trivia that caters to their own interests. And so I think that's been a ton of fun.
There's some people really looking forward to it. They were by my stream earlier today. They're like, hey, did you announce the trivia for this week? I haven't seen anything yet. Like, did your brother hold to his promise to include insert movie or fandom here?
Yeah.
I was like, hey, look, we're both busy. I don't know. I'm sure he's going to follow through. We'll just wait and see.
Yeah, it's happening. So this will come out afterward, but we're going to be doing on, what's the date on that? The 9th.
6-9.
So
69.
If you missed it, we're going to be doing Ice Pirates trivia. And then we're going to have, a pretty lengthy, like Pride special sort of thing because it's, LGBTQ month. Yeah. So we're going to have, quite a few questions on, different movies, that, fit that. Bill, and that's gonna be a ton of fun too because there's so many good movies out there, and I think some things that not everybody has seen, and so hopefully we get some recommendations to, or stuff that we talk about through the trivia that people then want to go out and see this month as well. I think that's going to be nice. Did you have a special thanks for a review? Did you see any reviews recently?
I do. We have a new review this week, and I'm going to need someone's help because we've been promising to send one of our stickers. We have a stickers for our Goonies episode, our Masters of the Universe episode, our Saw episode, and soon for this one, because the graphics are ready, but this one not available yet. But someone left a podcast review on iTunes, which we really appreciate. That's where we want these reviews, and we're begging for them. This person's going to get a sticker. However, this review was left by, and here's the name. This is where I'm going to need some help. 1Z2F79V00342208413 is the name of the person who left the review. So whoever you are, you're going to need to call in to our call center here at the home office and let us know who you are so I can send you a sticker. The title of the review is Great Podcast for All Movie Buffs. And the review goes like this. An enjoyable listen for anyone who considers themselves a movie fan. Well produced, well thought out, and a nice, light, humorous tone.
Wow.
Boom.
I like it. Well, thank you.
Whatever,
8413. And
you don't remember their whole name? How rude.
Sorry about that. We just lost a fan. Gained a fan and lost a fan.
thank you for the review. And guys, for future episodes, we need these reviews. It helps get us on the algorithm so we show up higher on the charts. Go leave a review. And I'm not guaranteeing everyone a sticker, but leave a review and get mentioned here on the podcast and you do get a sticker. And there was only one this last time. So if you're next, odds are good you're getting a sticker.
Yeah, and they're really great stickers, too. If you haven't seen them, check us out on Twitter and come to Twitch. Check out those live streams, and you might win one there playing trivia as well. All right. Well, thank you very much for the review. Keep those coming. Before we get to the rest of the podcast, do we have some big questions?
Yes. What can you look forward to in the rest of this podcast? We got some fun stuff, some fun questions to answer for you, like how did a parade change the fate of Pixar? How many hairs makes a Sully? That's S-U-L-L-E-Y, I hope. I don't know. And what movie got its own monster trailer treatment? All that in the rest of the episode.
Yeah, if you've only ever heard us on the podcast, then you may not know we are also a hairy bunch. Beards unite on this one. Looking forward to answering those questions. But first, what you watching?
Well, for me, it's been a busy few weeks. But I'm you dancing to the little intro there?
Yeah, I hear it in my brain.
I just started and finished Mosquito Coast on Apple TV Plus. That's been a fun journey. I don't know if you've seen that. Kind of reminds me a touch of Breaking Bad in there. You got a real smart guy who's on the run with his family from the authorities. He's got to get down to Mexico. That one's a blast. 7 episodes, easy watch. I recommend it. I have not finished Dark yet, but I am into season 3 of it. My mind is officially just toast. Like, I don't even know how I wrote this week. That show is so good, but so hard to follow and wrap your brain around. If you want a challenge, do it.
I'm so excited for you because those last couple episodes, when it all comes together, just if you didn't think your mind was blown, it's so satisfying. I'm not gonna ruin it. Anyway. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad you're watching.
I can't wait. I've slowed myself down, and I'm just doing like an episode every few days because we all know that feeling of the first watch of something is so amazing, and you always wish, I wish I could go back and watch it for the first time again. Well, I can at least slow it down a little bit. finally got to The Wire. It's on HBO Max. I've been wanting to watch it for years.
Me too.
Through 4 or 5 episodes of that, and man, so many people that I recognize from TV and film today. And it's really well done. Very dated now.
Yeah.
Like they're talking about pagers and how cell phones are new, and it's dated, but it's good. I watched Nobody finally.
All
paid
right.
The money and watched Nobody and loved it. Man, Bob Odenkirk killed it. I just love the premise. It is kind of like John Wick, but there's some twists to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the bracelet? And then this is not a specific movie or television, but I stumbled onto a new streaming service. I say stumbled on because I wanted to watch one movie in particular, and it was only available here in the States on Tubi.
Yeah, T-U-B-I. We just discovered Tubi.
Did you?
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't seen it, it is free. You can watch TV and movies. You do have to watch a few ads, but they're not very often. There's not very many in a show. And it's good quality. It's the original cut of the films. It's not like it's the TV version or anything. So if you're looking for some content and you go to Just Watch, the app that we mentioned or the website we mentioned regularly, and find something on there that says it's free on Tubi, don't be scared. Jump in there and download the app, and it's worked well for me.
Yeah.
And then games.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. One more thing. Podcasts, I haven't listened to any. I'm getting back to that soon. I've got back to the gym, so I'll be adding those. But games... Still playing Fall Guys, Rocket League, Warzone, and now I've added a new dodgeball game called Knockout City.
Oh, I think I watched you play that.
That is like an open map. Did you? It's fun. It's an open map that you can jump in and play against like 3v3 or 4v4 dodgeball with its own unique specialty spherical objects and abilities, and I highly recommend you check it out. It's fun. It's free on Xbox, and it's only like $20 on the other platforms.
Oh, well... I'll get it then. I didn't know it was free on Xbox. Yeah, that's cool. Let's see. Yeah, I started watching Rick and Morty finally. Talk about picking up old shows. Yes. and yeah, so they had been advertising. Season 4 was available on some app or whatever. And I'm like, okay, cool. I want to finally go watch this because everybody's been talking about it forever. And all they had was season 4 or season 3, I think. Whatever. Anyway, one of the seasons, like, well, but I'd like to start from the beginning. So, yeah, finally found that available and had been watching, just finished season 1. Really, really enjoyed it. I figured I would, but it's my kind of humor. It's just silly and disgusting and, yeah, and really, really funny. So I'm sure everybody else in the world's already seen it, so I'm last to the party, but whatever. Enjoying it now. We watched A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. Which is like one of the last good ones.
Yep.
And it all kind of goes downhill after that. Watched The Evil Dead. Been on a bit of a horror kick, I guess. And Cargo. I don't know if a lot of people have seen this, but with Martin Freeman. Kind of an understated zombie film based in Australia. And I'm a zombie fan of the movies. And not Rob Zombie. And I know you. Yeah, you're the Rob Zombie. I'm the actual zombie fan. I really enjoyed it, and I sometimes watch movies very, very late at night and forget that I've seen them, so by the end of the movie I'm like, yeah, I've seen this before. But I didn't mind watching it again. Still enjoyed it. Kind of a cool premise. Like I said, it's a bit understated, so the zombies aren't those, you know, 28 days later, like massive zombie horde sort of things either. They're just like sort of scattered about and they're still dangerous, but it's more about the drama of the relationship of this family trying to survive. We watched Sweet Tooth, that new series on Netflix. It's like, you know what, that premise sounds really weird and it could be awful or it could be great, and I'm really enjoying it. I think it's cool. Good. The kid who's in the lead, great casting. He's instantly charming and likable, as is his companion that comes along, I think, in the first episode. Will Forte is in it, which may only be for the first episode. Sorry, spoilers. But if you're counting on it to be a Will Forte show, it is not. But still really enjoyable, and I think they're doing a good job. I'd like to see where it's going to go. I've also picked up on this podcast from Q Code, who apparently does like radio plays, like old style. I think they're mostly sci-fi and drama sort of things. But this one is called From Now, and big cast in it. It's got the main two stars are Richard Madden, who was from Game of Thrones, and Brian Cox, and it's
of McDonald's fame.
Yeah, sure. And it's really well put together. Yeah, so if you're interested in that sort of thing where it's, you know, it's basically like listening to an old radio play. Yeah, really well produced. So I'm a fan of that. I'm going to finish that up. There's only like 6 episodes, I think. And then I want to check out their other stuff because they've got like 5 or 6 other shows. Yeah, I'm gonna check that out. So if you're looking for an interesting podcast to listen to that isn't like this one where it's more conversational or whatever, where it's straight up entertainment, then that's from Q Code. It's called From Now.
Brian Cox has an amazing voice. Like, he could step right out of acting, live action, and do nothing but voiceover work the rest of his life if he wanted to.
True, yeah. And that is that's a feasible profession now to just be able to do voice work and stuff, and you can stay in the animated field for the rest of your days. All right. Well, speaking of animation, most of the show is going to cover that, and most of it is going to be talking about Pixar, and that's going to be featured as well in our behind-the-scenes segment. I thought I knew the history of Pixar, and I did not. So I looked it up. And now I'll educate you as well. Pixar began in 1974 as CGL, Computer Graphics Lab, a few computer scientists who knew they wanted to create the world's first computer animated film. Months later, they were $15 million in the hole with nothing to show when they were invited to a meeting with Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas where they discussed the future of filmmaking. Lucas brought CGL into part of the Lucasfilm computer division known as the Graphics Group. The core group pioneered much of the tech that would make CG animation possible, including the alpha channel, particle effects, and an interface called REYES, which stood for Renders Everything You Ever Saw. In the next few years, they created a digital compositing computer that went through several name changes. Originally called Picture Maker, it was then called Pixar, E-R, and finally, Pixar. In 82, the Pixar guys were doing special effects for ILM, but despite some advances, their group under Lucasfilm looked like it might be going under. Lacking the proper computing power, they knew they were still years from creating the animated movie of their dreams and decided to become a hardware company, selling the Pixar Image Computer. One of the buyers of this Pixar computer was Walt Disney Studios, who used it to migrate the 2D animation process into a more automated method. Their first movie released using that computer was The Black Cauldron. Despite Disney's interest, computer sales were not taking off. They held on until 86 when a new investor decided to back the Pixar crew. With funding from Steve Jobs, they became a new corporation. Yet by 1990, they were reduced to selling their hardware division and released some of their software tools to the open market. Jobs considered pulling out of Pixar, but a familiar group returned with a more invested interest. Disney made a $26 million deal with Pixar to produce 3 computer animated movies, the first being Toy Story. In 1995, 21 years after their very humble and ambitious beginnings, the gang from Pixar fulfilled their dream and released the world's first feature-length computer animated film. Pixar continued to work with Disney. While the two companies had many disagreements over contract details and ownership rights, in 2006, Disney bought Pixar at a valuation of $7.4 billion.
Cool.
Billion. Former CEO of Disney, Robert Iger, said he knew it was time to buy Pixar when he attended a parade at the opening of Hong Kong Disneyland, where not one of the featured characters created in the last 10 years had been made at Disney. They were all created at Pixar.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. He's like,
that's answered one of our questions for the day.
We're in trouble. His Pixar people are doing stuff that people are fans of, and they don't care about the Disney product anymore. So,
oh, wow. I thought I knew a little bit about Pixar, too. And I knew Steve Jobs was involved and Lucas had been at some point, but I had no idea that it goes back that far. And it took them, in theory, it took them that long to get their first movie out after, what did you say, 21
yeah.
years?
That's crazy. That's crazy. That is crazy. Now, I want to hear more about that Francis Ford Coppola meeting. What was his original involvement? Because he didn't end up doing anything with CG, as far as I know. So did he want to be involved? Is that where he was going to go? Like, I want to know what movies he thought he was going to make that were animated or something.
The big surprise is it turns out Godfather Part 3 was actually completely CGI. None of us ever knew. They were way ahead of their time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could be. Or we find out that Sofia Coppola is actually a CG character herself.
SC, it's CSS backwards. Yeah, it all jives.
It's all there. It's been right in our face the whole time. You never see her with real human beings. We are doing Monsters, Inc. Let's hear about this. Everybody knows this movie, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Synopsis. In order to power the city, monsters have to scare children so that they scream. What a terribly written sentence. However, the children are toxic to the monsters, and after a child gets through, two monsters realize things may not be what they think. What a terrible synopsis. I wish someone else had written that. I'm glad you all already know everything about the movie. Voice actors in this are John Goodman, Billy Crystal, Steve Buscemi, Jennifer Tilly, John Ratzenberger, of course, Frank Oz, Bonnie Hunt, Mary Gibbs as Boo, and James Coburn, this week's actor highlight.
Our city is counting on you to collect those children's screams. Without scream, we have no power. Yes, it's dangerous work, and that's why I need you to be at your best.
Coburn's acting career has spanned decades and an array of genres, starring in about a dozen different TV westerns, including Rawhide, The Rifleman, and Bonanza. His big movie debut was The Magnificent Seven in 1960. In 63, he was in The Great Escape, rejoining Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson, securing his place as an action star of the times. In 1966, he took on a new persona as 007 spoof spy Derek Flint in Our Man Flint and the sequels In Like Flint and Dead on Target. You remember those? And he's been in some of my favorite movies over the years, including Duck You Sucka, which is freaking awesome if you haven't seen that, Hudson Hawk, Maverick, and Payback. Monsters, Inc. was sadly one of his final performances. He died a year after the film's release. Great guy, just cool. And
he was a man's man.
True.
Like Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
That's a man's man.
That's right. He just didn't have the mustache. But yeah, if you're looking for some good career there, like there's some cool movies he put out and some different stuff, like westerns and action and all that sort of stuff. And those Flint movies are fun. So you should definitely check out his stuff if you've not seen much from him before. Monsters, Inc. is directed by Pete Docter. That's D-O-C-T-E-R. He also directed Up, Inside Out, and Soul. Now, I don't remember seeing this in the movie. It always just says directed by Pete Docter, but IMDb says it was co-directed by David Silverman, who also did the Simpsons movie and Extinct, which is an animated film I had not heard of, but it came out February of this year. So maybe it's one of those just they weren't going to support it with a huge marketing campaign because nobody was going to go to the theaters anyway. It was also co-directed by Lee Unkrich, who co-directed Toy Story 2 and Finding Nemo, and also directed Toy Story 3 and Coco. Yeah, I'm not sure. I saw some of these other ones that are co-directed, and I'm not sure if that was buried in the credits or what, or if IMDb is just wrong. I guess that's possible. Writers here for Monsters, Inc. are Andrew Stanton, who wrote on Toy Story, A Bug's Life, Finding Nemo, WALL-E, Toy Story 3, John Carter, Finding Dory, and Toy Story 4. So very much in the Pixar world. And Daniel Gerson, who also helped out with Monsters University and Big Hero 6. This came out in 2001 and was number 3 at the box office behind some huge competition. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone was number 1, and Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring was number 2. The fact that it made
what
it.
What timing.
And it beat out Shrek by only about $40 million. That was a huge year for what turned out to be really, really big franchises and stuff. I mean, because I would consider, even though there's only 2 films with the upcoming thing, it's still a pretty large franchise. And did very well on a $115 million budget, $577 million at the box office. That is...
And let's be honest, if we know anything about Disney, it's that box office means nothing. It's all the money they make on the merch and the ticket sales to the parks and all that stuff, where that's the real money.
Yeah, that will continue to generate for forever. Because
I mean, they probably got at least $1 million of my money just off the Sully figures I bought over the years.
And with our names backing it, they're going to get even more money. So I expect some sort of residuals after this podcast.
Seems fair.
Beloved Pixar film, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. And there's only two of these, so I figure we could talk about them sure. as they come out. Did you even need to rewatch this?
I didn't need to necessarily, but I wanted to. It really puts me in the right headspace for when I go to write my pitch. I did not rewatch the second one because I had just rewatched it not long ago. Mm-hmm. I was so blown away by this. When I first heard about it, I was like, well, all right, looks interesting. But man, it is so good. It's so fun. There's so many great characters that come out. It's a unique idea. And that's one thing Pixar does so well is coming up with something that just nobody's done anything quite like it before. And with this one, and then to get two of the best actors to do the voiceover work in John Goodman and Billy Crystal.
This isn't Boo's door.
Boo? What's Boo?
That's what I decided to call her. Is there a problem?
Sully, you're not supposed to name it. Once you name it, you start getting attached to it. Now put that thing back where it came from, or so help me! Oh, hey! We're rehearsing a scene for the upcoming company play called Put That Thing Back Where It Came From, or So Help Me. It's a musical. Yeah, put that thing back where it came from, or So Help Me. So Help Me, So Help Me, and cut.
Wow, 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 wow. They just work together so well in this film. I love that interaction with the two of them.
They really do. Like, they are a great team. Yeah. It's a shame. I don't think they've ever done anything live action before.
They should. But isn't Billy Crystal like a pocket-sized human being? So the two of them side by side would be... That'd be like twins.
Well, it'd be just like the movie. Mike Wazowski's a small like that's the point. They're a comedic duo.
They'll do the live action monsters movie one day.
There will be a musical version. I'm sure they'll both come out and do that on Broadway somewhere.
So good. I loved it. It holds up after all this time. I don't think it's ever going to really age.
It does. It's one of those movies that I would say on average, since it's come out, we've probably watched once a year. Like, it's just, We like it that much. It's always entertaining. The visuals are just so great. Like I said at the beginning, was that every new Pixar movie, they just step up their game so much with the animation. It's just, you see the hair on Sully, which they talk about how many hairs are actually on him. We'll answer later. But it just looks so great. So great.
No one had been able to do fur properly, and then somehow they conquered it when they made this because it looks so real.
Yeah, and I love the variety of characters they have. Like, everything is just some crazy stretch of, you know, this one's got 80 eyes and this one's got 40 legs or whatever, and it all seems to fit somehow. Even though they're all different, it's still cohesive. In that world.
Two of my favorite gags are like in the opening 10 minutes, and one, like, the kids are playing hopscotch out front and there's just the one person in the building that's a giant eyeball. It's like, how the hell did that person ever get in that building in the first place, or that monster? And then the other one is when they get to the crosswalk and he's standing next to what looks like Godzilla, yeah. And he says something to him, but like yells it, and the only response is like a chicken cluck.
Yeah.
Like, quack-a-walk!
Yeah, that is a good one.
It cracks me the hell up.
Yeah, they just, it's joke after joke. Like, it really, even there's good drama in this, but like they just keep up with the comedy the whole time. So that's really, really good. It's really nice. The voice actors they chose for this did a great job. Steve Buscemi is really awesome in this too.
What do you know? It scares little kids and little monsters.
I wasn't scared. I have allergies.
Sure.
James Coburn does a great job. He's somehow perfect for that weird, I don't even know what you, how do you describe that? He's some sort of
like a lobster spider,
yeah,
thing. Yeah.
I can't do it. I can't combine them. He's really good. Again, this is something I think is great for the whole family. Everybody can enjoy this. And for me, I can't really, I mean, if you want to really dig down into trying to tear apart the canon here as far as like questioning rules and how things work, you could, but I didn't do that for this. So for me, I think it's a 5-star film. I can't find anything wrong with it.
Oh, I agree. The only question I have after all this time looking at it more analytically is, where is this monster world in relation to the human world? Like, when I went to write my pitch, I wanted to write, I'm like, wait, okay, it's Monstropolis. I read something about a hidden world. I saw that listed somewhere. But where is it in relation to the human world? How do they have such access through these doors that are, and how'd they figure out they could do that? What's that technology? I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's answered.
No, I mean, they just basically establish it as here's how we access it and we know tech about it. But then they kind of stop there, and which is probably a good idea.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, it does make it troublesome when you're writing pitches. Because you want to know all those details. You may not work them into the story, but you still want to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So 5 stars from the Sully brothers on Sully and his companion, Mike. Then we go on to Monsters University. The synopsis here. Let's see how this is written. A look at the relationship between Mike Wazowski and James P. Sully Sullivan during their days at Monsters University when they weren't necessarily the best of friends. Slightly better and, you know, probably for the describing that movie, which is maybe a bit more, I don't know, open. Like the conflict there is basically they just need to graduate. So, you know, it's not as huge as a kid lost in the monster world. Actors here, we get John and Billy again and Steve. This time we add Helen Mirren, Peter Son, Joel Murray, Sean Hayes, Dave Foley, Charlie Day, Alfred Molina, Tyler Labine, Nathan Fillion, Aubrey Plaza, and tons more people. Like, honestly, the whole cast is really huge names, so I'm not going to keep going. But there's tons and tons of people in this. This was not directed by Pete Docter. It was directed by Dan Scanlon, who before this had done Mater in the Ghostlight, a short, a Pixar short in 2006. He did a movie called Tracy in 2009, and then most recently he did Onward in 2020. Which, if we're talking about Pixar movies, that's probably one of my least favorite. Didn't really enjoy that one as much. Yeah,
I liked Onward.
Yeah, that one and The Good Dinosaur. I probably won't watch again. Like, just not up for a rewatch.
That's the one I've never seen. I never did see Good Dinosaur.
I still like it, but I don't think I'll need to go. There's just nothing really unique about it. You know, telling you even the story is like not much happens. So, yeah. Let's see. This was written by Daniel Gerson, who also wrote on the first one. Robert L. Baird, who did lots of TV, also helped on Big Hero 6 and wrote for Ferdinand, if you remember that, a different animated film as well. Yeah. Dan Scanlon wrote on this, and he's written on everything he's directed, which I always like to see that. It makes a different kind of relationship there. You're more closer to the material, I think. What's crazy about this is it was 12 years after the first one came out. This one came out in 2013. Dang. That's such a barrier. Like, you just don't think that you're going to get a sequel 12 years later. Yeah, I just didn't think Pixar did sequels because they just seemed to establish that they just... Or Toy Story, I guess, was the only one that they were going to do. I can't remember the order of things, but it seems like we got a Toy Story sequel, but everything else they did, we didn't get a sequel. Cars, I think, maybe came as a sequel.
Yeah, and then eventually they finally did, like, Incredibles 2, yeah. Finding Dory, all that came around the same time. Like, there was an internal day where they were just like, all right, we're opening the doors and doing sequels to everything now.
Yeah, which... Why wouldn't you? Disney understands how that works. Like, you've got a franchise you build, you put so much into, and then this needs to keep feeding the next generations, you know, so that the money keeps rolling in. Yeah, but 12 years later, 2013, upped the budget to $200 million and made up for it $743 million at the box office.
Wow.
That is tremendous. Not quite as well loved, 80%. But, you know, I've watched this recently as well. I didn't rewatch either before the podcast because, like I said, we watch this often enough. And we rewatched Monsters University probably, I don't know, a couple months ago or something. And I try to pick apart the movie to say what's wrong with it. I can't find anything really wrong. I enjoy this. It is a different movie from the first one.
Yep.
Different emotions. But dang it, it's good. It's really entertaining and really funny, and you still get that camaraderie that builds with them. I think it's a great story to tell. I gave this one 5 stars too.
I remember seeing it the first time in the theater and I walked out and I was like, I like it. But then for some reason, never went back and rewatched it. It was a good like 5-6 years before I finally rewatched it again. I forget why. And man, I did not remember how good it was. And watching again, I'm like, dang, you're right. This one just really holds up. I mean, adding Nathan Fillion, if we could go above 5 stars, we would. But
Fillion gets his own star.
It was fantastic. Yeah, Fillion. So it's 5 plus a Fillion. That's how many stars I give this one.
Sully, any freshman with the guts to pull off a stunt like that has got future scarer written all over him.
I don't know how you're going to work that into the algorithm, but good luck on that. I really, really enjoyed it. And I agree with you. I would try to nitpick it, but I couldn't find anything. Just the great additional cast. So many amazing actors in that list you just gave me.
Yeah, they just picked the right story to tell. And yeah, great cast. And it was just really funny. Yeah, they did a great job. So, wow.
Makes me wonder, is that why they went back in time? Did they have a hard time telling a story that went past the original's Monsters, Inc. that could hold up? Because going to write the pitch this week, not easy to do. We know that.
yeah, I think they hit every wall that I did.
Yep.
Man, I got to tell you, this one hurt to write. Like, I was so lost. And I was like, I have this idea, and then I have this other idea, and I like both, and then I have these characters that I want to do, and I don't know that any of it came together. I have
was
words.
Was this your Matrix?
Yeah. Yeah. This was tough. Well, okay, so overall, Monsters, Inc. and Monsters University, great Pixar films. If, for whatever reason, you haven't gotten into Pixar, I think this is a great place to start, because it's such a open, fun concept that, you know, with these characters, they're so much fun. They're so funny. And like I said, it's great for the whole family. So everybody can watch this. It's accessible for everybody. So go out and watch these. They're fantastic. And you'll watch them again because you're going to love it. But now, our pitches. We write our own original pitches. To go into these franchises. We try and fit them in somewhere in their podcast. We pick a franchise, like we've done here with Monsters, Inc., and then me and my brother and I, we write our own unique pitches. They might be prequels, they might be sequels, they might be television, an animated version, whatever. It could be a reboot, but we, I don't know how many, I got to look at our stats, I guess, to see how many times we've done reboots versus sequels or prequels or anything. Cause,
I was just thinking the same thing. I know my tendency is to go to a sequel, but that I have done TV as a spinoff. I've worked in some creative twists on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see those stats, or maybe push ourselves one day to say this week, we're definitely doing a prequel. Like, you know, to see if we're capable of doing that. Cause
yeah, that's a good idea.
Like we did for Matrix.
We should have a dartboard or something that we throw out and it chooses for us. Yeah, but that's a good idea. All right. And so, yeah, if you haven't heard this before, that's what we're doing here for this segment. And what we do is we write a full synopsis. We pick a director and cast it. And then we put it out there for you to hear and say, would this be something you'd be interested in seeing? In some cases, it's the upcoming continuation of the franchise is so mysterious that we could be writing what's actually coming out. For this one, we know we're not. Yeah. It's coming up pretty soon, the television series. We're going to talk about that after our pitches. But you're up first this go around. You won the coin toss.
Before we jump into that, I do have one thing I need to add in, and that is for those of you scrubbing the podcast for the secret keyword, it's definitely not here. Jump to a different point. All right, I left for a pause there. If this is actually the part for the secret keyword.
Trickster.
The secret keyword this week is a little trickier. It is, listen carefully, CDA2319.
Oh.
As in a CDA2319. 2319.
Very clever.
That poor one gets shaved. Oh, God. Anyway, there's your keyword. It's all one word, no dashes, no special characters, no nothing. For when the time comes, write that down. Jot it on a post-it note. Put it on a napkin, whatever you got to do. Hold on to it. Now it is time for the pitches. My brother said my favorite part of the podcast, and I think what sets us apart from everybody else, is what we do right here. And this week, I'm going first with Monsters Return. That's my film. I'm bringing back the original director, Pete Docter, which is, I guess, kind of my MO. I like to keep the directors the same for a series of film. We know he wasn't the director on the second one, but I feel like he did such a good job with the first one. He gets it. It was his baby. And if we're going to go the way I'm going, we're directing the grown-up, older versions of the characters. Pete's our man. Bringing back John Goodman and Billy Crystal as Sully and Mike. Jennifer Tilly as Celia. Mary Gibbs as Boo. She was the young girl who played her originally when she was 4 years old. Interesting note on that. I watched a few videos because I wanted to know if she stayed in the industry. She didn't. She actually went on to college and did gymnastics or something else. But now she's doing cons. They're having her on the circuit and talking. And she's actually turned into quite a really good-looking young lady. She's like 24 now. Can you believe that? 20 years later, she was 4 when she did the first one. She's 24 now. I want her back as Boo. I think it would be really cool, yeah. A nice nod to the original film to have her back in. By the way, I'm setting this about 9 years after the events of the first film.
Okay.
So, I don't know. She might be a little older than 13, but I think she could play it. Steve Buscemi is Randall Boggs. John Ratzenberger as Yeti, and Bob Peterson. Bob, did you know Roz was a dude who did the voice?
Yeah, yeah. It's one of
Bob Peterson as Roz.
Production.
And then Anna Kendrick as Penny, a new character. Which, by the way, moments ago, I had to change that because I had Aubrey Plaza, because I forgot Aubrey Plaza was in the second one as a different character, so I changed it. Well, I don't want one person doing two voices, although it's fine. I wanted to change. I had her as a backup anyway. All right, here's the synopsis. Again, set about 9 years after the events of the first film. Everything's bumping along and working great in Monsters at Work, the series. We find the team working and training new recruits for the future in the great city of Monstropolis. Towards the end of this season one of this show, about 9 years after the events of the first film, rumors have spread through the human world about strange, monstrous-looking beings appearing in children's bedrooms late at night. So windows and doors are always locked up tight when the kids go to bed. Laughter and screams have now become almost impossible to capture. With a new power source needed, what is Monsters, Inc. supposed to do? At the end of the final episode of season one of Monsters at Work, we get a post-credits trailer for the movie Monsters Return. So it's a polar opposite of what I did with Matrix. Instead of a movie leading to a series, we got a series leading to a movie, so you don't have to wait very long to enjoy more of your favorite monsters.
Cool.
We open with the brainstorming session at Monsters, Inc., with Sully, Mike, Celia, Roz, and the team pitching ideas for how to power Monstropolis again. Some of the ideas include sending giant monsters to the human world to scare people again. But a video montage on the screen in the boardroom reveals how Godzilla, King Kong, and others had always failed at surviving, and no monsters in Monstropolis were about to volunteer for that job. Having monsters dress up as humans and performing at comedy clubs was another idea. Also followed by a video montage showing that this often didn't work in the past since monsters didn't exactly have a similar body type or were even funny enough to get laughs from humans. Rare exceptions of Sam Kinison and Rowan Atkinson were great, but there just weren't enough monsters with that skill set. And then finally, YouTube videos created by the monsters was another almost winner, since people would just think that there was CGI involved in creating such odd-looking characters. But the problem is, you just never know where or when people would be watching, so how would you even capture the energy? They needed an idea that would work, and they needed it quickly. Enter Penny. Literally. The doors burst open and Penny walks in. Sully is immediately smitten with this beautiful monster. Mike's jaws drop too, but he is immediately kicked in the shin by Celia and reminded he already has the love of his life. Penny is a consultant that Monsters, Inc. brought in to help with the situation. She also happens to be a relative of Roz, who introduces her to the team. Penny is a bit mysterious, but also very funny. She pitches an idea to the team using a slideshow and has everyone equally amazed and amused. The pitch? A new toy that will be the must-have Christmas toy of 2010. Something that kids will love and have with them all the time. Something that can capture both their screams and their laughs. Something that parents won't fear or question. Too much, anyway. Well, what is this? Yells Sully. At least that's what he thought he asked excitedly. Instead, he really just kind of rambles on what sounds like words in a raised tone. Again, he's smitten by Penny. He's still all dreamy-eyed and weak in the knees by the presence of Penny. He clears his throat and tries again, a little more calmly, says, "What I mean to say is, what is the amazing new toy?" Penny replies, "That's the part we need to figure out. I'll be closely working with your team to develop this, and I think you should definitely be on that team, Sully. I could imagine, couldn't imagine anyone more amazing on my team," with just a touch of sexy in her voice. The movie carries on as Penny, Sully, Mike, and the team try out all kinds of wacky ideas for toys that will help power the city. We see them go through all sorts of trials and iterations, but nothing seems to work. During all of this, we see Sully and Penny grow closer and closer together, and of course, begin to share meals and more time together outside of the group. The team finally lands on something that they think will be a winner. Eventually, we get a scene where they all step back and look at the camera and exclaim, "That's it!" But we as the audience don't get to see what the "it" is. We know it'll be great, and eventually we'll see it, but we don't get to see it yet. Penny says, "Okay, now we need to find a way to get this into the hands of all the boys and girls in the human world. Something like this is going to need the right pitch, the right distribution, the right company. I have some ideas, but I'm going to have to talk to a few monsters first." We fast forward to another meeting of the development team. They gather back in the boardroom, and Penny pitches the idea of taking their product to a well-known company in the human world. But how? How would they get a product from Monstropolis produced and distributed in the human world? She says, "I'd like to introduce a monster that I think can help make this happen, but..." Before she can finish the sentence, Randall Boggs reappears. He had been camouflaged until that moment. Sully and the team immediately growl and get angry. "What? What are you doing here?" screams Sully. Randall simply grins and says, "Hello, boys." A nice nod to Supernatural. Before the room turns into full-on fight, Penny calms them down and asks for a moment to explain. Short story. They need a way to get their product into the right hands, and the only way to do that is stealthily. While Randall might have worked with Water Noose to create the Scream Extractor before, he says, "Hey, I was just working under orders," and that he desperately wants to come back. He reassures the team that he learned his lesson after being trapped in the human world and treated as an alligator. Penny reveals that Randall has agreed to wear a tracker and help them out, so long as he can return to Monstropolis permanently. A deal is struck, and the plan is developed by the team. Penny has the perfect human to deliver their product to, and Randall will infiltrate the human company he runs to plant the device and plans. I put here something, 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 because I don't know what the next part is. Use your imagination. What we need to get to is the nitty-gritty of the film. Randall returns from the mission, and the team waits in anticipation for a message from the person he dropped the product off with. A note was included with the package, including an email address to contact Monsters, Inc. about the project. Didn't take long. The very next day, the team receives an email, and they open it in the boardroom table screen. There's a video attachment. They open and press play. On the screen, we see an animated version of a familiar person. It's Steve Jobs, and he says, "Thanks, James, Mike, and team, for this amazing and generous gift. I can't believe you would trust us with something like this and simply hand over the plans and ownership without asking for any money, but you must know our team will do this justice. We've already begun production on the Boggs book." The team all glares at Randall, who just shrugs and smiles. "But I had to change the name to something a little more appropriate to our company. We'll be launching the iPad in April." That was it. Mission success. We jump to November and see the plan is working. The team is now filling canister after canister of both laughs and screams as kids watch videos, play games, and chat with their friends on their iPads. The energy is coming in like they've never seen before. Monstropolis would be powered for years to come. In the final scene, Sully and Penny are married, with Mike as best man and Roz performing the nuptials. We also get a little follow-up with Randall. He's back in Monstropolis, but he's still got that tracker on, and we see that every time he tries to camouflage himself again, it fails. Instead of disappearing, he blinks like a warning light. He is clearly not amused, but at least he isn't being beaten with a shovel. Roll the credits.
That's good. We've got some similarities, I think, there too. I think, yeah, we had some similar questions, I think, and we're coming up with like where should this go and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the trick with these pitches, and one day I'd like for us to share like our process, I think would be interesting, is you've got to have that problem that's got to be overcome. And what's the problem they have? Well, we don't know that much about their world other than they got to power it. So that's where I went.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was nice. I had a lot of different parts going on here, and we'll see how well this gels. I'm not really sure. But that's not for me to decide. That's for the listener to decide if they like this or not. So I'm calling this Monsters Inside, and I'm choosing a non-Pixar director, just because I like to throw things around and try different stuff. I'm not sure. It would be unusual if this were... Pixar has managed to, especially in the Monsters franchise, they do have darker moments where, like, they embrace the scary side of the monsters and all that sort of stuff. So I don't think it's totally unusual that we'll have stuff like that. But anyway, for a bit of a darker feel, I'm going with Dean DeBlois, who did Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon. Lilo and Stitch is one of my favorite Disney movies, maybe my favorite Disney movie. It's just so funny. And that's not necessarily dark, but it is a different feel for sure from a lot of the previous Disney films. But How to Train Your Dragon, I really enjoy a lot as well. It's one of my favorite newer franchises of animated films. I really, really enjoyed that. And for casting, whoever's done voices in the past, John and Billy and Jennifer will be there for that. For the other voices here, a character called Quills, who I'm choosing Robert Duvall. Snarls, got Sam Elliott. We talked about him earlier.
That's hilarious. I did not see this before, and I happened to bring his name up just randomly.
And Miranda, played by Hilary Duff. Kind of chose her at random, but I haven't seen her in a little while, and so it'd be kind of nice to see her in something new. Well, I guess hear her in something new. All right, here we go. It's evening in a suburban home a few miles outside Monstropolis. A woman asks her elderly father if he might want to read his grandson a bedtime story. He enters the boy's room where the grandson asks for various stories the grandfather has never heard of. He asks the kid, "Don't you want to hear about the three little monsters and the big bad human? Or Hazel and Grandel and the evil human witch?" The boy explains that his teacher says old fairy tales like that paint humans in an unfair light. The grandfather says these stories are important reminders of what terrible creatures the humans are. The mother argues that those stories are too scary anyway. "Too scary?" asks the grandfather. "We're monsters. Scaring is what we're all about." "Not anymore, Dad." The mother pats his father on the her father on the shoulder and leads him to his room. "I'll read the bedtime stories, okay? Maybe you should go get some rest, too." The grandfather, Howard Snarls, goes to his room and throws a grumbling fit, shredding a newspaper with his claws. We see bits of the front page story fall to the floor. It says, "Monsters, Inc. trades growls for chuckles 1 year later. The only thing scary here," states CEO James P. Sullivan, "are the profits." We cut to Sully and Mike arguing over how to approach an off-screen problem. Mike is guiding Sully through his trusted and proven process, Sully arguing how it makes no sense, that's an impossible task. On final reveal, we see Sully has put a diaper on Mike's baby. It's a snake-like creature with a big round ball like a belly. The baby hiss laughs, and its orb body shifts from hip to head. The diaper falls off. "See," says Mike, "you have to prepare for where it can go, not where it is." "At least it's only one night," says Sully. "How many diapers will I have to do in one night?" Mike opens a closet packed with what looks to be 3 months' supply of diapers and says, "Celia and I will pick up more on the way home, just in case." Sully faints. Mike and Celia are dressed for a fancy night on the town, talking about how Sully needs to get a companion and maybe some kids of his own. Celia also expresses her doubts that he can handle their baby daughter for so many hours. Mike assures her he'll be fine. They arrive at the fancy theater where we see protesters outside. Old Monster Snarls is with them, protesting the new play that features a love story between a human and a monster. Security is high, and Mike is told there's no re-entry, and they have to stay in their seats until the end of the show. Sully, meanwhile, is having trouble feeding the baby and calls Mike as soon as they're seated. Celia is already frustrated. A comedy of errors occurs when Mike has to leave his seat to get better reception for Sully's repeated calls and ends up dressed as an usher and then an actor on stage as he makes his way back to his seat. Sully is forced to take the baby with him to the store to pick up special formula. He runs into a young female monster, Miranda, who we discover is a new colleague at Monsters, Inc. She shows an obvious romantic interest in Sully, and together they are able to keep Mike's baby safe until the monster couple returns home. The next day at Monsters, Inc., protesters are on the steps of the facility. Snarls is there again, the group shouting that laughter is good medicine, not good power. Miranda visits Sully, where they continue to flirt, and she asks why he never had a family. She's forward. He says he just never made the time, but seeing what Mike has, a family isn't off the table. He looks in a drawer of his desk where one of Boo's drawings is hidden. Miranda says Sully has to meet the right monster first. Outside, Snarls and the small group are getting frustrated that maybe their voices aren't being heard. That's when a sinister-looking monster shows up. His name is Theo Quills, and he agrees that this new relationship with humans and monsters isn't right. He invites Snarls to his home, where he shares ancient books which tell the origin of monster-human relations and how monsters were run out of the human world and were so angered by it they actually began to feed off human fear. Eventually, as monsters evolved, the fear energy was harnessed in different ways, but the core of that relationship stood. That is, until the new CEO Sullivan took over. Humans will never welcome monsters into their world, says Quills. They will never be friends. Quills says he's been preaching the same thing as Snarls for years and no one has been willing to listen, but he's got a plan. He says it's time monsters came out of hiding. We see the old monsters go on a public scare campaign to catch human attention and reignite the old rivalry. Miranda, meanwhile, is trying to sway Sully into returning to the fear approach for power collection. Looking at Boo's drawing, he tells her how wrong it is to scare and shares with her the story of how Boo once came to the monster world and changed his entire outlook. Quills and Snarls make repeated visits to the human world, causing a more public scene each time. We get crossing news stories between the human and monster worlds, both about mysterious and unauthorized visits to the human world. While public perception in the monster world is worry over the criminal rebel monsters, the humans are dismissing the monsters as a viral hoax. Sam Gibbs, however, is one human man who believes the monsters are real. Gibbs is repeatedly watching news footage of the monsters going into houses and never coming out. He's sitting with a book nearby entitled Magical Doorways and the Monsters Inside Them, Not a Metaphor. Sully is in a meeting with several business-looking monsters where the discussion, I don't know what that looks like, I guess they're in suits, is perhaps this is the beginning of a new era, one where monsters can openly interact with humans, and perhaps both worlds could benefit from a change in relationship. The concern is these monsters visiting the human world are the wrong representatives to send, and they must be caught. Sully says the power plant is on high alert with security everywhere. They don't know anyone how anyone unauthorized is getting in. The others suggest that perhaps it is someone who is authorized them. Sully mumbles to himself that it wouldn't be the first time. Quills and Snarls are arguing that their plan isn't working, that monsters may only be capable of scaring human children. Quill says he has a new plan. Sully's back at the power plant. It's the afternoon, yet most everyone is gone for the day except for Miranda. They discuss how the city council has compelled him to temporarily shut down the plant to keep all the doors closed until they catch the rebels. Miranda encourages him to check on Boo to make sure she's okay and knows that these and explain that these monsters scaring people in the real world aren't like him, that he'll protect her. Sully pulls Boo's door from storage and steps inside, but the decor in her room is different. Her bed is gone and the room is sparse. When he moves further in, the closet door shuts behind him and metal bars block the door. Sully realizes he's trapped in a giant cage. Gibbs reveals himself through a space between the bars. He says he's been waiting for him and shows him a collection of Boo's drawings featuring Sully. "What did you do with Boo?" Sully shouts. "If you mean Mary," said Gibbs, "she's safe and sound. You can't hurt her again." It turns out that Gibbs is Boo's father, who obsessed over the idea of magic doorways when his young daughter disappeared for a day, only to reappear in her room like a year earlier. Her only explanation, yeah, which she defended over and over, was that a big blue monster and his green ball friend looked after her in a magical monster world. Cutting back to the power plant, Quills is inside turning everything back on. Miranda, who turns out to be his daughter, Quills' daughter, is there helping him. They power up dozens of doors and open them to the human world, letting humans wander in. A great panic ensues, sending monsters running for their lives. Mike tries to get into the plant to find out what's happening and meets with Snarls, who regrets what he's done. He explains who is behind the invasion, and together they have to find a new way to Sully. A great chaos of events unfurls with a showdown between Quills and Snarls, where Snarls' grandson gets taken as hostage. Sully gets freed, and Boo helps Snarl's grandson escape Quill, who gets banished like Randall. Sorry, there's a lot happening in a short period there. They return all the humans, and Sully has to say goodbye to Boo again. He says he can't risk anything bad happening to his people or hers, and shreds all the doors and shuts down Monsters, Inc. In a final scene where he and Mike are working At the new redesigned power plant, which runs on solar energy, why not? Mike asks him if that really is the end of the ties between monsters and humans. Sully says he doesn't want to give up hope. It's just neither of their people are ready, but we shouldn't give up. He quotes Mike saying, you have to prepare for where it can go, not where it is.
Oh, nice. Good way to circle back around.
So there's a whole lot that happens that it's a little bit jumbled and I don't quite have it all for the ending there. But yeah, that's supposed to be kind of a real heartfelt thing where he has to say maybe final goodbyes to Boo again, because to protect their world, like all those people are going to go back and then trying to figure out a way back in. So they basically have to shut down every way.
I like you painted a really good picture there. Like I felt like I was watching the movie, especially in those opening parts. I think you do the same thing I do. I get into this real detail for the opening like page or two of the pitch, and then I'm like, all right, I know I can't write the whole movie here. We don't have time for that. I need to get to the ending, so let's wrap this bad boy up, you know?
Yeah, that happens. You're in a scene and you're like, well, I hear the dialogue, I might as well put it down. Yeah. And then you're like, exactly. This is going to be an hour long.
I'm going to write 18 pages.
We should just challenge ourselves and take a month off and like just write. Go ahead and be screenplay writers. We might as well write the whole thing and see if we could get it out there. All right.
I mean, you never know when somebody's just stuck on a movie and would be like, oh, hey, this is perfect. Let's do it.
You don't know. Yeah. And well, we talked about this before where we're going to end up writing so many of these synopses that at some point, a movie is going to come out very similar, and we're going to be like, ah,
yep.
Hey, buddy, I want a story by credit and a few dollars for that.
I realize because I'm hearing you and reading at the same time, that always helps me stay focused, that I wrote in all this stuff about bringing Boo back and Yeti and didn't even put it in my pitch.
Oh, you didn't?
I put him in the casting, but I didn't even put it in the pitch. I had plans for it, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's funny.
Just assume it did happen in the movie.
It's a cut scene. Yeah, it was filmed, but it's...
There you go.
Yeah, they couldn't make it.
No, I really like that.
Oh, thanks.
You tackled the same thing about Sully finding a love interest.
Yeah.
At the very end, you tackled the same thing about an alternate energy source or way to capture.
Right.
Like you said, there's only so many directions we can go based on what we know.
Right.
So it's not a surprise that we're overlapping a bit.
Yeah. But we're going to find out. Monsters at Work, the retake, if you will, or continuation of this franchise, is coming up soon. And here's the synopsis on it. A Monsters, Inc. series set 6 months after the Monsters, Inc. film about the monsters getting their energy from children's laughs instead of their screams. So they are continuing the story, and we're going to see what they're going to do with it. Maybe they end up in the same sort of troublesome situation where they got to figure out a new energy source. Maybe Sully gets a love interest. We'll see. An alternate synopsis here is mechanic Tyler Tuskman dreams of working his way up to the laugh floor at Monsters, Inc., which I think is probably going to be a more accurate detail, and probably leaning towards who, well, I think that's obvious. That's the main character, from the poster I saw. But also, well, we'll find out here in a little bit, but, just from casting and stuff and number of episodes they're in, but a bit confusing. All right. I'm saying a lot, but I'm not really saying it. Let's get into the details here, and then I can figure that out with you. So this is created by Richards Gunaway, which his name is Richards, as in there's more than one, an enigma of a name.
Interesting.
But here's how it gets even weirder. He chose to go by Bobs as plural. B-O-B-S.
Not dicks? I don't think he knows how that name works.
I don't know how you get Bob for Richard and there was Richard. Whatever. Maybe he's a monster. He's got two heads or something.
Exactly.
Anyway, he has been a producer for lots of various Disney TV series, so he's already got a lot of that under his belt. This is a collaboration between Disney Animation Studios and Pixar. But I'm thinking it might be more Disney than Pixar. Pete Docter said that unused concept art from the movies is being recycled for the series. So I think Pixar's involvement is that here's the characters, and here's some of our early work on it, and now do something with that. But it's mostly going to be Disney, which kind of makes sense because, I don't know, how many CGI shows do we get, like, consistently being produced, like, weekly shows?
You know, I don't have kids of my own, but having watched the Disney Channel when visiting nephews and whatnot, it seems like there are quite a few on the Disney Channel and some of those others aimed at kids that feel like they're all CGI.
That's true. I've seen, I can recall Paw Patrol. But I'll tell you this, I've seen enough of those and, like, the Mickey's Clubhouse and stuff that you really only get, like, maybe 6 minutes of original content. The rest of it are all these repeated segments that are, like, the same thing.
With songs.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess if you don't need too much originality, you can do that. All right. The voice actors here. Bonnie Hunt returns, which she wasn't hugely featured, but she was actually in the other two movies.
Yeah.
Mindy Kaling is going to join us, which she's hilarious, so I look forward to that. Lucas Neff, Aisha Tyler, which she's awesome on Archer, so she's very animated for that. The pun on words, the play on words there. Henry Winkler, which I love him. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
And Ben Feldman, not the real Ben Feldman, but the...
nice shout-out.
That's a shout-out to a friend of ours. But Ben Feldman from... oh, now I blanked. Superstore, thank you. The bad news here, or the iffy news, may possibly be bad news, is some of the key actors from the movies are only slotted as being in one episode. Jennifer Tilly, John Ratzenberger, John Goodman, and Billy Crystal. From the poster and second description, I'd say that I read earlier, is that this is one of those handoff shows where we get the big cast for the plot and then they go away. But here's where it's strange, is... who's implied to be the lead, Tyler Tussman, who is voiced by Ben Feldman, is also only credited for one episode. So, so I really can't tell. It's all just conjecture at this point. But we do know that it is going to begin July 2nd, so just around the corner on Disney, obviously, Disney Plus. And we're going to get 10 episodes. I don't know if it will continue to a second season. I'm sure they're going to figure that out based on interest, but 10 episodes for the first season, and I'm interested
for sure. Yeah, I mean, I love that they painted such a cool world. They created this such a cool world in those first two movies, and we saw so many of these background characters that I want to know more about. So I'm not surprised at all to hear that we might only see Goodman and Crystal or hear them and Jennifer Tilly and Ratzenberger for an episode, and maybe they'll come in here and there, because let's be honest, those are some big bucks to pull in people like those for regular. But my theory, and we talked about this I think before on the live, is Disney's printing money with Disney Plus right now, and even though they're having to use that to kind of pad their bank account with all the problems they've had during COVID in the parks, I think they're making a lot of money off these, and to me, it makes sense to continue to produce just top-notch content. I was kind of hoping we'd see Goodman and Crystal throughout, so who knows? We don't know yet.
Well, and maybe we will. Like we said earlier and on previous episodes, like doing voice work for animation is respected and profitable and now, so it's not anything to scoff at. Like if they're in between movies or whatever, I wouldn't be surprised if they're brought in from time to time, even if they're not on every episode.
I mean, they seem to have gotten it with the Marvel side of things. They've made the shows now movie quality with movie quality actors. I would hate to see the Disney side of the same company take a much different approach and, like, you know, cheese ball out of it.
Well, I mean, that's their history with earlier Disney films. Like, the sequels would come straight to video, and they were all replaced. Like, the voice cast was replaced, and it was... always inferior product, but it got the rentals, it kept the franchise going, and you could still sell toys and stuff. Who knows? We'll find out. July 2nd. I'm sure they'll get a ton of viewership, at least for that first episode, and then we'll figure out if it's gonna get the following that they're hoping for. Okay, gang, that is the Monsters franchise. But there is more, because we have some trivia, some tidbits, some behind the scenes, what you didn't know about the movies. Tons of fun. Let's get into it. I'll go first.
Want me to kick it off?
Yes, you go first.
You'll go first. Go. Me go first? I'll go.
Let's go at the same time.
Big Sully will tackle it first. All right, here we go. Trivia. Mary Gibbs was so young, she was the voice of Boo, that it proved difficult to get her to stand in the recording studio and act her lines. Instead, they simply followed her around with a microphone and cut Boo's lines together from the things she said while she played. That's brilliant.
She's so precious that too. All the voice work there is so great.
Michael Dow.
And her little song in the bathroom is hilarious. It normally took 11 to 12 hours to render a single frame of Sully because of his 2.3 million individually animated hair strands. His total number of hairs exactly is 2,320,413.
Wow. That's crazy.
Slightly now less probably do it on than our beards combined.
Slightly less. Billy Crystal was originally offered the role of Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story. I didn't know that. And he declined, which he later regretted after seeing the film and told Pixar not to forget him when something else good comes around.
Oh.
Round. You think round. It wasn't written that way, but I thought in my head.
He did a joke before it even became a character. That's how funny this guy is. When Beautiful. Sully greets Ted, the monster so big we only see the lower half of his body, Ted was originally supposed to roar like Godzilla. The filmmakers asked permission from Toho, Godzilla's film studio, to use a Godzilla roar, but Toho turned him down. So Ted responds with a chicken cluck instead. In one of the credit bloopers, he's revealed to be Rex from Toy Story auditioning for a role in the movie.
Oh, that's great. That's hilarious. I didn't even think about that. That's really good. Disney Pixar prepared a special trailer for Monsters, Inc. to show before Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Mike and Sully play a game of charades in their apartment, with Sully acting out Harry Potter. Mike has difficulty solving the puzzle, some of his guesses being Dirty Harry, Harry Flowerpot, and when Harry met Sully, when Harry met Sully, a reference to Billy Crystal's starring role in When Harry Met Sally. Eventually, Sully puts on round spectacles, sticks a paper lightning bolt to his forehead, and sits on a broom with an owl on his arm, to which Mike ecstatically guesses The Sound of Music. Sully gives up and walks off screen as Mike finally guesses Harry Potter, and they cut away to the title cards, noting that Monsters, Inc. is now showing in a theater near you. Really near you, like maybe right next door. Dude, is that somewhere where we can watch that? Because that sounds amazing.
I'm hoping so. And I can't remember if I've seen it or not. Like, it feels like I may have, but I don't know. In one of the special credits or something. But
Harry Met Sully.
Yeah, I want to see that.
That's too good.
Any of those Pixar shorts, I love them. They're really funny. Boo's real name is Mary, as shown briefly on one of the crayon drawings she shows to Sully in the scene where Boo's going to sleep on Sully's bed. The actress who provided the voice of Boo is Mary Gibbs.
I don't know if this is further down in here, so I might be spoiling it, but I did watch in the video where she's on stage at one of these cons, and she was the daughter of one of the guys that worked on several Pixar films, and they were only going to use her for quick little fill-in clips until they actually brought in the voice actress they had hired, but decided to use her for everything because they wanted a kid, if possible, and she had gotten so comfortable with all the people there that it just worked.
Oh, that's great.
So that was interesting.
I think it's a good payoff. Like, you really get her being young.
Yes.
Like, it's... Yeah, it works.
And the fact that they just used, like you said, like in the earlier one, just used stuff that she already was saying and worked into the film. It's just brilliant. George Sanderson, the monster who keeps getting caught by the CDA for 2319 emergencies, is the monster who was supposed to be the protagonist for the original Monsters, Inc. concept, a bumbling and up monster who couldn't scare anyone, till a timid girl put upon by her brothers teaches them how to be scary. George, in the final version, is even the same color and monster type in the original storyboards. Oh, that's really interesting.
He would have been a nice protagonist. Like, he's memorable in the movie. Cool. Bill Murray was considered and tested for the role of Sully, but the director, Pete Docter, said that when the filmmakers decided to offer it to him, they were unable to make contact with him and took that to mean no. Yeah, we've heard that before about Bill Murray. Like,
uh-huh.
He just kind of shows up when he wants. I think we said that on the Ghostbusters trivia, too. They weren't sure that he was going to be a part until he showed up on the first day.
He would have been a good Sully, but I think John Goodman's booming voice really had the presence to be a big, big blue monster, you know?
Yeah.
In the movie, there are several hidden Easter eggs referencing to what was their next film, Finding Nemo. First, at the Harryhausen's restaurant, behind the octopus chef, there is a painting of Nemo on the wall. Second, when Sully throws Randall into a bedroom, a statue of Nemo can be seen on the wall into the bedroom. And last but not least, when Boo hands Sully some of her toys, she hands him a Nemo toy. Mm. Man, they really went overboard. That's great.
I remember the Nemo toy.
I did too.
I didn't notice the other thing. The human,
there's a Jesse in there too.
Right, yeah. The human world that Randall is tossed into was used in the same set from A Bug's Life in 98 with the trailer, and the Pizza Planet truck from the movie Toy Story is parked next to it.
I love it.
I remember seeing that too. Yeah, that Pizza Planet truck really gets around.
Oh, snap. I didn't know this next one. Sully is named after former Texas A&M University president Lawrence Sullivan Sully Ross. So there's a Texas connection to Sully, too?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if you guys don't know, that's where I went to college, and I remember that statue and be like, well, this is kismet that there's a Sully already here. Of course I was supposed to go to A&M.
That's crazy,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's cool. This is Pete. Doctor's only Disney, that's the new how you put it together, Disney Pixar film that didn't win an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. Up and Inside Out have both won, but Monsters, Inc. lost to Shrek in 2001. This is also one of only two Pixar films to be nominated for the award without winning it, the other being Cars. Yeah, they do.
Well, that's Shrek is so good, too. That's a tough competition.
It is. I was surprised how much I enjoyed that movie. Yeah, that was a really good one.
A sequel to the movie was originally planned by Circle 7 Animation titled Monsters, Inc. 2 Lost in Scaradice. The plot would focus on Mike and Sully visiting Boo on her birthday, only to find out Boo has moved. So Mike and Sully must travel through the human world to find Boo. This sequel was canceled when Circle 7 shut down. Oh, maybe that's why it took so many years.
Good point. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
During Billy Crystal's Hollywood Chinese Theater hand and footprint ceremony in April 2019, a small foot stamp in the shape of Mike's was also pressed into the cement next to Crystal's actual prints and signature and written Mike W. That's great.
I love that. That's too good. All right, now moving on to some Monsters University trivia. There is a line in Monsters, Inc. where Mike says that Sully has been jealous of his looks since the fourth grade. Since this movie was going to show Mike and Sully meeting in college, it obviously contradicts that line. Director Dan Scanlon admitted that there was some conflict behind that, and even had one treatment showing Sully and Mike meeting in the fourth grade, then skipping ahead to their university years. Pete Docter and John Lasseter personally told Scanlon that they loved that he was honoring that one line said in the movie, but he had to do what was best for the story. As a result, the line was put aside and Sully and Mike would be shown meeting in university. As a joke, Scanlon said that Mike's line in the first movie is an old monster expression. Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good throwaway sort of thing.
Smart.
Pixar's Luxo Jr. Ball appears as a drawing on the stone wall at the beginning of the first Scare Games task. That ball's everywhere, too.
The ball is also on the bedroom floor of Boo when she goes back home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Though one of the voice actresses from Monsters, Inc., Bonnie Hunt, returned, she has a different role in this movie. In the first movie, she voiced Flint, the scaring trainer for Bile, but in this movie, she voiced Miss Karen Graves, Mike's school teacher. So maybe I should have left in Aubrey Plaza. There's a tradition in the Monsters films.
That's right, it's okay. And nobody knew. When this movie was in development, writer and director Dan Scanlon described each of the misfit characters to sketch artists Jason Diemer and Chris Sasaki. But with art, he just said, think mysterious. They went variation after variation, got really frustrated. Finally, Chris Sasaki drew an A for his name and put two eyes in there. The character slowly evolved from there.
Wow. There were some real fun ones in Monsters University. I like
that. He was one of my favorites, too.
The long legs
walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good.
During the Don't Scare the Teen Challenge, one of the traps quotes Ariel from The Little Mermaid, "But Daddy, I love him."
Sully's pink spots appear blue when he's out in sunlight and return to pink when he's indoors or when it's nighttime. I don't remember that at all, but I'll have to watch it again.
Well, you know, being the collector I am and having so many different figures, you can notice a difference in the spots on different ones. But one of the things I've found interesting over the last few years is his nails.
Mm.
Some of them are gray. Some of them are more of a purple color.
Oh, okay.
And I forgot to watch in the film to see what it really was. I need to go back and do the research. But I get, you know, they all that's approved through Disney. So technically, it's all accurate.
Yeah.
And that makes sense as to the film as well.
Well, and they have they also done... variations of the spelling of his name, right? Like at,
yes.
Yeah.
I have most of it is S-U-L-L-E-Y, but some is S-U-L-L-Y. Mm. And last year, as part, I wanted to end this debate, I sat down and watched both films and scoured every scene I was watching for anywhere it was written. And it was never written in either of the two films as either with E-Y or Y. And so I was like, that's it. I've solved it. It's just whatever is most easiest for you in the moment. And then somebody said, oh, it's print. It's actually written on the back of the DVD. It says S-U-L-L-E-Y.
Well, it's the same. But the credits would have to say it too. Or does it just say
it
James
says
Sullivan?
James P. Sullivan. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I was hoping that we'd find out it was actually Y or actually EY. Either way, I would have been happy. Mm-hmm. So that's the closest thing we have to any proof, but it's short for Sullivan. So I think technically either works. My favorite figures are the ones that have no E.
Well, of course.
Just because I immediately catch how cool that is.
Yeah.
The final fact we have, the room number of the dorm room that Randall and Mike share is 319 on the second floor, which references a 2319, with the initials for white sock being the 23rd and 19th letters of the alphabet, respectively. The CDA code that gets used as a running gag in Monsters, Inc. I had heard that one recently, actually.
Yeah, we talked about the 23 and 19. On the live. Yeah, yeah. It was like a fan or something that discovered that was the... W and
that's
S
impressive.
Of White Sock is the 23rd and 19th letter.
That's really impressive. I would have never caught that, no matter how many times I watched it.
All right. Well, that was tons of fun. Yeah, so we have, like I said, lives every Wednesday. Join us there on twitch.tv/movieretakes. And definitely check out our website as well, movieretakes.com. Follow us over on Twitter. We're always talking about movies there and what's coming out, what's getting rebooted and remade and retaken and all that sort of stuff. So check us out there, and we look forward to you coming back for another podcast. I am Matt, support a writer, read a book.
And this is Big Sully, roaring Nerds Unite.
The team of Wazowski and Sullivan are going to change the world starting today. Say scream!
Scream!